ओम शांति, ओम शांति, ओम शांति. Beautiful words. This is a panel discussion about living your truth, and I brought three very dear friends with me to have a conversation on stage. Very experienced souls who have been over the years in many, many retreats and then gone home to wherever their home was and had to figure out, how do I use this new knowledge in my living space? You know Philip? I think you've met Philip before, from the Netherlands. Philip has come to Peace of Mind 20 times? 16 times. He started as a guest, then he became a companion, and over the years he has brought the spiritual principles of Raj Yoga into his life. He's a very busy, very successful businessman in Holland. He lives with a partner and he has a child, a beautiful daughter, so he's a family man living at home, running a business in a very busy life. And he's integrated spirituality into it. So that's why Philip's here, because he's you several years later. One version of you. One version. Next to Philip is Gabrielle, who lives in Blue Mountains, in Lura, the retreat center in Australia. She is 40 years plus studying with the Brahma Kumaris and practicing Raj Yoga. She lives inside the meditation retreat center, but maintains a full-time job out in the world. A beautiful blend. She's another version of how we live our truth when we leave here. And everyone met Sister Gopi the other morning for meditation. She did a beautiful meditation with us yesterday morning. And I invited Sister Gopi for two reasons. One, she probably asks the best and hardest questions ever. So beware, beware. And the other is, she has watched for so many years as people come to retreats and then they go home and they try and apply practically what they've learned. So she's developed a lot of wisdom over the years. So she'll both ask the questions and offer insights. And I have here all of your questions, which I will add as we go. So over to you, Sister Gopi, and welcome everyone.
Thank you. I think that's a great title, Living Your Truth, because I feel that's exactly the pitch to now walk out back to your context. And I guess for me, the context you've come from, and you were you 8 days ago, that context is still the same, but you may have outgrown you a little bit, right? And you're walking back into the same context. Perhaps a little different, because the energy of meditation and vibrations, we were talking about that earlier, would have reached souls in your life. Some might be feeling good in your life. Some might be feeling a bit anxious because they sense your detachment growing. So, more or less, you're going back into the same context, but a different, from a different space, different awareness, and a different perspective. And I think it, in my own experience, living your truth has a deep connection with principles. What are the principles that I'm living on with my life? And the very first principle for me is the principle of honesty. And so my question is around that. Is that when you both, in your own contexts, had the aha moments, the spiritual realizations, you had the experience, what did you need to get honest about before bringing changes into your life?
Oh.
You can think about that too.
That's a great idea, to think about it yourself. But when I think about when I started my meditation journey and this aspect of honesty, it's a principle that I've always valued anyway. But meditation and life very much go hand in hand for me. And I think the honesty was more an aspect of understanding who I really am. So dropping those markers of identity like gender and age and nationality and religion and so on, and stepping into a consciousness that's deeply truthful, deeply honest, and that enabled me to stay very authentic and develop what I often refer to as soul conscious intelligence, which is a very inspiring way for me to live my life. And so making time for myself enabled me to become honest with myself. And if I think about what's happening in our world at the moment, what I hear in my workplace and other places that I visit is this thing called time poor. You know, busy, busy, busy. And it takes a depth of honesty to actually decide that I'm making time for myself. It's not selfish. It's absolutely essential that you do it, that I do it, and that I stay doing it. So that means that I'm making time to do the first thing that Sister Janti spoke about, turn within and stay aware of what's going on in my inner world. That's a big step, because then I'm going to start to see, and I do start to see, why it is that I have certain emotions and feelings, different from my colleagues, different from my spiritual companions, to certain situations. I only have buttons. My buttons can only be pushed because I have buttons, right? Yeah? If I didn't have any buttons, then I wouldn't be triggered. But this aspect of self-honesty enables me to become very aware of what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, what I'm experiencing, and understanding that without projecting it onto others, but taking full responsibility for that. And you know what? That's hard work. It's light work. It's easy work in some ways. And when I started to meditate, I didn't actually understand how easy meditation is. But it's being consistently honest, and self-honesty leads to self-confidence. I'm going to finish there.
Nice connection. Honesty and time.
So, my first trip to Madhuban was in a period that was highly transformational in so many different areas of my life. My work life, I realized that although financially very attractive financial service industry, it wasn't good enough for me. So I quit my corporate life and started my own company. I changed relationship. And it was an intuitive feeling that I needed to get the answers of who I wanted to be, that was a search that started here, a long period. And I liked the Philip up the mountain much better than the Philip that left the Netherlands before I came to peace of mind. But then how do I incorporate it in your day-to-day life, and what decisions do you make concerning your work, your relationship, my role as a father, all these things? That will take time. I realized it was quite funny coming here and really attracted. Amrit Vela was amazing for me. So when I came home immediately started, continued doing the 4-hour meditation and do everything that we, in the process that we did here. I tell you, that's, you're heading for disaster, because my family wasn't used to that. My work wasn't used to that. Meetings, I would stop to have traffic control. They didn't know what happened. I didn't go to my office in kurta pajama, I tell you that. Although I know a guest that did, actually. Went into the hospital in his kurta pajama because he was so enlightened here that he thought he bring even his costume in his work. So it took me time to find out what to let go of and how to incorporate this knowledge, this understanding. Not just getting the knowledge, but really incorporate the knowledge. That's something completely different. And that takes time. That takes actually years. And then incorporate it in the way of your life. And I actually started my spiritual life in transcendental meditation just after university. And that was beautiful, beautiful experience in meditation. 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the evening. But in between, nothing changed. So incorporate it in your life as a way of living, that takes time. And that took a few years. And be kind to yourself to take the time to figure out who the new person is and where you have to let go. Gabriella asked me, how did I structure my day? So I started with Amrit Vela, but that was a disaster after 5 days. I was completely, drained. I was so tired. And then even your work doesn't work anymore, and you didn't sleep. So, and it was very kind sister, my companion at that time, said, be kind, you don't have to go full Monty immediately. Because my work life, also in the evening, often my work, takes me to evening meetings, and I would arrive at 10 o'clock at night at home. And I love to write. And I started always before I came here at 11 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock at night. Well, that doesn't work. But it's these sanskars and these way that you're used to live, it's difficult to change. So gradual steps. And one of the best lessons that I would like to offer you that helped me, of course, take the morning meditation, but start at 6. For me, that worked. And in the weekends, I was able to do Amrit Vela at 4 o'clock, because in the afternoon I could rest. So that's how I combined it with my other responsibilities. And I was able to schedule meetings, not for a full hour, but 50 minutes, and take 8 minutes to follow up on all the things that came in the meeting, and 2 minutes to do traffic control. Really practical, simple to do, you can incorporate tomorrow.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? My experience was just a little bit different. When I started meditating, I was 22, and so I was only entering into the workforce at that time. And so I think the biggest thing for me was, and generally here when you're in Mudurban, you get that time to have a rest in the afternoon because you're up early and you can't say, well, manager, I'm off to have my little siesta. I think because, and I was in a centre at that point, so I was doing Amrit Vela. I love what you said around recognizing, integrating it into a timetable that makes sense and works for you. And I remember Daddy G saying to a group of us, and in the group were musicians, people in the hospitality industry, night shift workers, doctors and nurses and so on. And she would say, it's when you wake up, that's your Amrit Vela. So the principle is on waking, meditate. Yeah. And now if that means it's 3 PM, then that's when it is, because that's your cycle. Hmm? And that was a great relief to a lot of the ballerinas and the ballet dancers and the musicians in Australia at that time. Because it meant that they could stay true to their yogi self and to the expression of creativity in their profession as artists of various sorts. But I do, and I think, you know, you're coming back and you're in the West, and this was, you know, over 40 years ago, and it was so different, this aspect of Indian culture merging into, or to bringing that into what was strictly a very Western mindset, Western family relations and so on. And I don't think they really understood, but they were supportive enough. But more than anything, I was independent. So I was able to mark out my life for how I wanted to live it. And I had no responsibilities, which I really commend you on, how you managed responsibilities of a partner and a family. Whereas for me, I had responsibilities in a more global kind of way to the Brahma Kumari community, living in a centre and working a job. But I have to say my priority has always been my yogi life. And what I found, which I'll just share quickly with you, is that wherever I had to move to or was asked to move to do some service or whatever, I would just give it to the divine. And that pure thought, that pure intention and a determined thought meant that even now, when employment is difficult, wherever I go, employment opens up if that's what I'm needing to do, in an area that is suitable for what my skill set is. I work in social development. And it's felt very much like the divine, we say Baba, but the divine was always present and guiding and making things available, because my intention was very, very clear.
I think one of the principles you raised, which was important, is that when you wake up, meditate. And it's very interesting how now science is supporting that. That the moment you wake up, within the first 10-15 minutes of you waking up, whatever you think and feel creates your mood for the whole day. And you know how powerful a mood can be, right? You wake up and it's a good mood, nothing's a problem. But you wake up and it's a bad mood, everything's a problem. And I think that's a very, very important principle that I know for me personally has been a guiding star through the whole thing. But I think one of the other things is that sometimes when we have good experiences, spiritual experiences, like we've had experiences in meditation, sometimes there can be a bit of a tendency to want to replicate that experience in your life. I want that same experience I had. And this time, this moment, this situation is different. And that time, that moment, that situation is different. But what you do have is a connection with yourself and with the divine. So in that moment when that's exercised, something else gets downloaded. And I always feel like that's the only thing you can go away with. You can trust the connection with yourself and trust the connection with the divine. And that leads me to my second question. Can you tell us a little story about how you have used God or this connection with the divine to overcome a challenge of any kind?
I feel very fortunate. In the first time I was here, and the first day, I immediately went to Amrit Vela, and I immediately had a deep experience in connecting soul, Supreme Soul. And as you say, you wanna have that experience again. And then you get home, and you're sitting there on your own, and then you find out, atmosphere in Madhuban and all these brilliant brothers and sisters might have something to do with me getting there so easy. So it takes, you know, I'm not going to beat around the bush. It takes work, hard work to get there. But understanding, and especially the power to withdraw and decide that you shouldn't, that was my normal practice. Problem, analysis, decide. I took away from the first time here that I should, in these more complex questions about my life, that I shouldn't try to make the decision based on my brilliant, you know, analytic part of me. But in meditation, let me be guided by the insights that are coming to me. And we also always mystify the relationship to the divine and God, as it's suddenly you're struck, especially in Christianity, you know, Christian background, by the light of God, and it's a big bang. He gradually reveals it himself, and the answers will come in time. So from the start, I used that trusting the process and taking the time that the answers would appear not by my own thoughts, but by understanding and guidance from the divine.
I think you were asking questions around a particular challenge, and I remember the question that someone here asked, was it? What's your biggest challenge? And she said, no challenges, everything's a blessing or a learning opportunity. And I kind of echo that in a way. I mean, I could look back and go, yeah, I can see that that might have been a challenge. But one of the things that I absolutely love about the lifestyle that I've chosen is the relationship with the divine. And that it's so natural. It's so natural, this relationship. It's very subtle, and it's just me turning my mind to that one. And it took a while. There were some big blessings that I'd been given, but it took a while to really understand that. And so when it came to challenges, I guess it wasn't so much a situation or a relationship. It was more me staying connected with the divine. And so that was my challenge, if you like, was to keep my mind connected with that one. And what it's meant over time is that I really love the idea and the experience of many different types of relationships with that one. Not bound by gender, not bound by age or space or time or all the markers of identity that we adopt and that we hold fast to don't exist in that relationship with that one. So challenge, I think it's been more one of moving more deeply into that experience of being with the divine. So when there's been moments in my profession, in my relationships and situations and circumstances, it's been another opportunity to explore more deeply a particular aspect of God and to claim that, as very authentically mine.
Mm-hmm. Something that keeping your heart open to receiving from God. And it's something I witnessed in the elders of this movement a lot. having worked with a number of them over the years, especially Daddy Prakashmani, who was the first administrative head after Brahma Baba passed away. And I remember taking her for a walk around her little cottage. And then we came into her sitting room and we sat down. And there was a young man who was heading up one of the departments on the campus, walked in and sat in front of Daddy and was quite upset, in fact quite angry. Something had happened in his department, he felt it was unfair, and he just needed to let it all out, and he was just letting it out. And I was sitting on the side, and I'm not even in that scene, and I'm watching him getting angry at Daddy. And I'm watching Daddy's face, which is neutral, and I'm starting to have waste thoughts. Right? I'm not even involved in it. And I'm thinking, how can he speak like that to her? And why isn't she responding back to him? Why isn't she trying to pacify him? Why isn't she trying to convince him? So he kind of, you know, says what he needs to say. And after about 5 minutes, Daddy then says to him, is there anything else you want to say? And I'm like, huh? And he says, no. And then she picks up an apple, and you know, a little bit of toli. She gives it to him, and he goes off. So I'm feeling a bit confused, and I look at Daddy, and I say, Daddy, why didn't you try and help him? You know, you just let him speak and get angry and say all kinds of things. And she said, my sweet innocent one, Daddy wasn't even listening to what he was saying. Daddy was sitting with Baba, with the divine, because that's the term we use to bring that person. Daddy was sitting with Baba so that he could get what he needed from Baba. And that was a moment when I realized, wow, this soul has no barriers in her relationship with God. That she can just allow him in to face any scene that comes with her, in front of her. Right? And that she's not the one giving. Every soul needs something from God to kind of reach a level of contentment inside. And I thought, that's what I want to learn. You know? Yeah. So I know we have some questions, Judy. We have more stories, but maybe you can...
Well, yeah, there's a question here that... I like very much your question about what do I have to be honest about. And when I went back my first time, I had to be honest about where I was pretending in my life. And I was pretending in so many ways I didn't know until I'd had this kind of experience. And I realized I was pretending to be happy, and I wasn't really. And I was pretending to be really peaceful and calm with the children, and I wasn't really inside. And I think that has continued, which is why I also value the, you know, making the solo time with God, the private yogi time, so important in my life, because it's the only way I can see honestly what's going on inside of me. There's so many layers of pretense, you know, because we're just coping. We're just getting by. So I thought I was happy. I wasn't really until I tasted what happiness felt like. And then it changed my relationship with everyone. Because when I looked at I had two daughters at the time, and the two-year-old was a temper tantrum queen, and she would have temper tantrums all the time. And I would think, I'm so peaceful, trying to calm her. And then I realized, no, her temper tantrums come when I'm agitated inside. But I'm a master of self-control. So even I didn't know I was agitated. And then she'd have a fit, and then so she became more of a mirror. I stopped looking at her as a problem, and her behavior as a problem, and more, another mirror. Let's be honest with myself. So the level of honesty continues, and that's the power to face, really, which you can only have that power if you are connected to the safety line. I feel quite safe having that conversation alone with God.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not with another human, mm-hmm. but alone with God, definitely. Mm-hmm. And only having the power to see so clearly where I'm pretending. I don't want to pretend. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have truth than a comfortable illusion. And so that's always been true for me, but I was hard about it before. Now I'm soft, much softer about that, thanks to this meditation practice. One of the questions that came, and I heard it in Philip, what you were saying, which is wonderful. I did go back after my first experience, and my husband thought that I'd had an affair because I was just like a little bliss bomb of love. And of course, I was having an affair, but with God. And so I was very happy for a long time, but others looked at me like, something's wrong with her. What's happened to Judy? You know, she went to this retreat and she came back, something's wrong. So then, of course, the questions came about, has she been brainwashed? Did she join a cult? What happened to her? These people wearing white, being vegetarian, and, you know, and I didn't even know any of that. I had to go online. Anyways, that's my personal story. But it does happen to us that we go home and other people wonder, why this new you? This can't be right. And I remember Daddy Janky saying, yes, you have been brainwashed. Your brain had a really good wash.
Yes.
I thought, okay, that's a great way to describe it. But the question came, how can I help others see the light and not believe the news, the social media, the politicians, what we call reality out there? Many of us think, I'm going back to reality. But the truth is, this is reality. That's not. But others out there think that's the reality. And so how do I go back and help them see the light without them thinking I've been hypnotized by the BKs? Good question for both of you.
I want to start with, you know, you have to find your own path, the role that you have to play also with this knowledge, and first incorporate it. And I wanted to share this feeling that I had here with so many people, but that wasn't necessarily respectful at the time. So be careful how you share what's just emerging within you, but it hasn't grounded yet. And I say this because you will experience a lot of people with different levels of consciousness. And what I've been taught here is to be respectful always. Not if you really want to help, one of the senior sisters said to me, be respectful the level where the level of consciousness is for the person that you talk to. What level of this knowledge can they incorporate, or, you know, make sure that they don't think you're a complete lunatic when you're coming and you share them, you know, I'm a soul and a supreme soul is there and all these, and by the way, we've got 8 powers. So be careful how you dose, you know, be truthful to yourself. Find out what the role is that you have to play. And I found out through meditation and years, also in conversation with the divine, that my role is to translate this and be respectful and reach as many people as I can, but in a subtle way, and distinguish to the people that already have the consciousness to go deeper in this knowledge. And so even how you present the what has happened here, I did that in different ways. My younger sister and I knew both that we knew something from childbirth on, we had an awareness and a consciousness even without knowing the Brahma Kumaras. And so second year I said, sis, you work with dying patients. Listen to this music I brought from here. I said, you know it's time. And she joined me to the peace of mind to the year, the next year, give you a ticket to come again. My elder sister, she never, in all these years, asked me what I'm doing here. So her consciousness, she's a very smart woman, but she's not open to it. So it's not respectful to, you know, share all this information. So when she asked me, what are you doing there? Mindfulness is generally accepted. You know, I do a lot. You know, balance in life. Oh, yeah, that's why you meditate, to balance your life. That's a way that she can accept this understanding without being disrespectful to ask something of her that she is not open to and won't help her. So if you really want to help, be detached from your own experience, be respectful to consciousness of the others.
I think that for me, there were a group of friends that I had who were also doing this form of meditation, so we could bubble away in spiritual intoxication with each other as much as we liked. That wasn't a problem there, that was easy. In terms of my family and my work, these days, meditation is in the workplace. They talk about health and wellness and the importance of positive thinking and so on. Way back then, that was something for hippies and monks and, you know, recluses. It was very, very different. The aspect of vegetarianism was incredibly different. It was so, oh, you eat carrots? You know, it was so different. But in my workplace, I never felt a disconnect because I wasn't inclined to preaching anyway. I didn't mind if people knew what I was doing, but I didn't say. They would inevitably ask, and I would always give them an honest, gentle answer. And often they would ask one-to-one. You know, they'd come into my office or they'd seek me out and they'd ask something. And I would always say, but I'd be mindful about their tradition, where they were coming from, and I would usually know that by then, and my language was not BK speak, ever. So I was never using words like, you know, the jargon that you probably have heard here, gyan. There's so much. And so, detached, I was working in health at the time, I wouldn't use that word, but I would use words like respectful space, things like that, that people understand quickly without a barrier going up. So for me, I think I'd probably just say I was maybe introverted, although, in that context, I didn't try to say anything or do anything different. Obviously, I'd be in situations and they'd ask about my food, I'd say. The one that it probably struck most with was one of my brothers who, he was a hunter, and so I suggested that he shoot with a camera rather than a gun. And at the end of his life, he's left now. He was actually a photojournalist and shot beautiful photographs of animals and scenery and so on. But I think you need to be really quiet about it in terms of being really respectful of where people are coming from, the people that you live with. But don't be surprised that they'll know anyway. They'll know through your vibration. They'll know through your presence. So it's really like a respectful conversation in the end. I wouldn't say that my family has ever been supportive. They haven't at all. Have ever understood like you, Philip. They've never asked a question. I was 22. I was going off to India. My mum did come and do the course because she was wanting to check out what I was into. And I thought, wow, mum's a BK. But she was being a beautiful mother. She was checking out to make sure that I wasn't doing anything, anything cultish or anything harmful. And she was fine about it, but never understood or never even asked questions. And in some ways I could say that that was disregard, but I never took it that way at all. I felt it was them, obviously I didn't live with them anyway, but them allowing me to do my journey. I had wanted to talk to my dad before he left the body, and so I went home and stayed for a while, and I really wanted to find out, I just wanted to talk to Dad about God. And I thought, how do I bring this up? Like, just God's not in his framework. So I was making him a cup of tea, and I was taking it out onto the veranda for him, and he sneezed. And I sneezed. And he said, God bless your love. And I said, oh, do you believe in him? And so we started a conversation that way. And I had just been thinking to the divine, I'd love to be able to talk, say something about you to Dad before he leaves. And that's how the conversation opened up for that to happen. And we had a lovely conversation. No, not interested in many ways, but did love the sense of peace. Mm. So it's very personal how you approach and have that confidence that you'll find the way and the right moment.
That is that a lot of it about serving is our attitude, and that as we walk back out, it's a service field we're walking into. It's an opportunity to exercise everything we've learned here, from our peace to our patience to our tolerance. And when you see it like that, then it doesn't feel like a bondage. Nothing needs to feel like an enemy, or you have to defend yourself from something, but really an attitude of serving. And I think then you can be guided as to what to say, when to say. And definitely with your own family, less is more. Because you try telling anybody about knowledge, you'll end up in an argument. They don't want to listen. But what they do want is they want to feel your change. And so for your family, that's the priority.
Leading by example. Mm-hmm. And so after a few years, my parents noticed the difference. They joined me for a retreat. My uncle of 84 said, I think I need to follow you on that mountain. But not by convincing them or sharing the information, but by growing, deepening your understanding of the knowledge that you've been provided this week.
I do think that's really important, actually. It's a lovely point, and that the ones that are really close to you, they do pick up that vibration, they do change. And eventually, when my brother left the body, my parents were so... And I was in New York at the time, and they delayed the funeral so I could get back. And I was so pleased to be there with them. They were totally gutted that their son had died. And just to be able to be there, and I think the only thing that I ever said that was remotely spiritual was I made the comment that everything that takes a body at some point sooner or later has to leave the body. And I was saying this to Sean, my brother, and it really touched my parents. So it's this aspect of how you grow with them, even if you're not in their day-to-day, and how they remain influenced just by you maintaining your meditation. And regarding the workplace, I've really shifted. I think it's beautiful what you said, Gopi, is that I see it now as a place to give. You know, I don't think of it, oh, I'm going for this job interview or anything like that. I work at a senior level, but I see it as a place to give. And it It doesn't intrigue me, but I'm delighted that whenever I've gone, changed my job and or moved city or whatever, I know the souls. I know the souls I'm working with. I know I've met them. I can see the past connections. They're not aware of it, as far as I know. They don't comment on it. They certainly comment on vibration, but they don't comment on that. But look into your workplace and see. You know, obviously you'll see it with your family, but and I start to think about, I do think about my work now, my profession, as a place where I'm serving. That's why I do it. That's why I stay doing it. It's a beautiful way to serve. And if I can change my consciousness that way, you have such a great day, such a nice way to spend your day.
You know, that's a nice segue into this question. You seeing your workplace as a service field, and the service field as we leave here, Gopi, because the question is how to learn to see the world as non-hostile and non-cruel, how to cope with the pressure of a big city and deal with people's inadequacies and negativity. So we know we're leaving here and going back to a world on fire. It is full of hostility and cruelty. So how would you respond to that question?
You know, a lot of your, in my observation, in my own experience, a lot of our ability to face something has to do with the capacity of our mind. When the mind is depressed, even the smallest thing feels like a big thing. When the mind is buoyant and light, it's amazing how much you can get through. And so I think for me, it's a lot of it is about winning my mornings through meditation and study that allow me to create an abundant mindset. I'm ready to be available. I'm ready to give. I'm ready to surf the... Because if study, especially spiritual study, this is where knowledge has a big part. You know, for so many decades, it's one of my passions is to learn something new every day. Because it keeps the enthusiasm alive. Now, either you're emitting or giving out, or you're taking something. So keeping yourself benevolent first thing in the morning, where you're rolling out the red carpet of good wishes to all the souls in your life, you're nourishing your mind with, you know, jewels and insights, and you're just keeping your mind above the gravity of the physical. That's how you can sustain your enthusiasm. And when you have that energy in your mind, things don't feel hostile. Actually, and especially when you have Baba's company, the company of God in your heart, then it nurtures compassion in your mind. Compassion and mercy. And those are two very important energies that are born from good wishes. You know, I more than anything, I feel that the call of time now is to become a complete well-wisher, no matter what. I remember Daddy Jenki. She's a phenomenal personality. She passed away at the age of 104. At age 60, she was given a new job description to go and start world service outside India. She was based in London. Between 60 and 104, she went around the world 1.5 times, helped to open centers in 120 countries, and had to deal with such a variety of cultures, religious backgrounds, personalities, languages. And of course, there would be people she would meet that would be upset about something she said. And there was one particular person who used to work closely with her and had once said to her, "Daddy, in this public talk, I'm interviewing you, I don't want you to talk about God." Now, Daddy Jenki, and not talk about God, that's impossible, because that's her lifeline. And she didn't say anything. And when the interview started, Yeah, she answered his questions, and after about 10-15 minutes, of course, she brought in the connection with God. And he got really upset. After the interview, you know, he said, that was the worst ever. And she said, look, I don't care how many bad wishes you have, I'm going to kill you with my good wishes. Like, you need to have that much faith in your pure feelings. Is the purity of your feeling weaker than someone else's rubbish that comes your way? And I think that's what this journey is about when you're walking back out onto the battlefield, so to speak. You can view it as a battlefield, you may struggle. You can view it as a school, you may learn. You can view it as a hospital where, you know, you get a bit wounded. But it's okay. Where there's faith in your purity, miracles can happen.
Yeah, on that, Gopi, too, I think there's something very practical about this question, because there's things you can do to limit the amount you absorb, and one is don't read the news over and over again. Know what you need to know, but nothing more than that. And that was a practice that I've done for decades now. And the thing I used to have to watch for was the rugby game. I had to know if the All Blacks had beaten the Springbok or not, because that was what was going to be talked about at work. Yeah? But now our world is so different. And what intrigues me is that all of my colleagues, and this is an area of social development, do not over-listen to the news. They simply don't. They get the headline and that's it. Now that's world news and it's local Australian and local LGA news. They get the headline and that's it. Because we know how we get re-triggered when we listen to this and see the same image again and again. So while I was protecting myself as a yogi, this has now become popular culture practice. And it includes social media. So if I'm doing that, if I'm feeling like the world is hostile, and there's a lot of evidence, we're going to see more of it, but I need to protect myself, and yes, my morning meditation and so on, but these practical things. And remember that step four that Sister Grace gave you in that morning meditation around how to transform a thought. Use that step, very, very practical. And the other thing I'd like to mention is that to every feeling that you have that's a non-beneficial one, like fear, and it's very debilitating to live in seeing the world as hostile. We know it is. We have to be spiritually knowledgeful. I don't want to absorb it. But to every one, like fear, for example, there's an opposite. It's peace. So in your meditations, focus on peace, focus on love, and it will gently and draw that from the divine, and it will massage away just gently your fear. Your level of resilience will come up. So some really practical steps around what to look at and what not to look at, but what to do in your meditation too.
This is a lovely question about, you know, being involved in social development and in good things, in things that are helping humanity, and then going into meditation and your mind being full of solutions, being full of those wonderful ideas you can put into practice to benefit others. But how do I know the difference between when that message is from the divine or it's mental chatter? Should I welcome these thoughts or stop them because I'm supposed to be thought-free during meditation?
This is one of the worst things for my employees, because more and more I started to trust on the messages that I get. But you have to discern them. You have to look at them. Is it still ego? Why? Coming from ego, coming from old beliefs? Or is this a divine message? So slowly, slowly, you start to rely on what it is that you need to do. But that's why I take a lot of times not to act on it immediately, but take time and work churning. We use it a lot here. I churn on these ideas. And so funny, just before I left, one of my colleagues said, often you come up with these ideas that I've been trusting to follow, but I only understand them so many years later. Me too, by the way. It's more of an intuition that you feel, I think I have to look in this direction. It's not there yet. It's not a program, project, or whatever. I don't act on it. But let it simmer till you find the moment, and now I have to act on it. I find the wording, I can put it into action. So, and then you know it's not something coming from ego, from, you know, old habits, old ways of, but it's the right thing to do. And that's actually, I learned here, you saw the solar project. It was presented by Brother Golo and Sister Sonia. And it was quite funny, when I came here the first time, there was this idea of solar. And I asked them, being in project management, so how much money is needed? I'm not sure anymore. The first funding round was 6 million or 10 million or whatever. And so how much is there? There's 1 million, so we start, the rest will follow. Because they took the time to think this through, knew that it was the right direction, trusted the outcome. And this is something that I really learned, to trust on this intuitive, but also the process leading up there. So no MBA business plan immediately, but let it grow and develop and churn on it if it's the right thing to do.
Just another angle to this. When I first, I've been through many different centers, but I remember I would sit in meditation and I had these wonderful service ideas come in. And one day, after a longish meditation, I thought, I wonder if that's okay. And I wrote a letter to Daddy Gulzar, one of the other senior elder yogis. And I said, you know, I have these wonderful ideas coming into my head during meditation, but is that okay? A week later, and this was before the emails were there, and I got a fax with one line to say, lack of controlling power. I had to sit with that. It was like, this was the answer to my question. And I realized, okay, when I sit with Baba, I sit with the divine, I sit with myself, it is that time, especially meditation time, is that time to dig deep into your reservoirs of peace and love. And then I have to create a separate time for reflection. Because the more I hit the note of silence, then something very original comes out of that silence. And often it's one inspiration. It's not a lot of chatter. It's one inspiration, and that's what your nose follows. But until you hit that frequency of silence, something original can't come out. You're just recycling ideas, influences, other stuff. So that was my takeaway from lack of controlling power.
You're still in busy mind mode somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Gabriel.
I was resonating with that, and that when I started this journey, I was an artist, and so I'd sit in meditation, and calm equals creative. Calm silence equals creative. But deep, deep silence is what we really need to be doing in meditation. And so
that was the surface in a way, and I would see, think, I'd know I've got to do this with this glass, I can see that all of these thoughts would come because my mind was reasonably still. But now it's going much deeper than that. Don't stay there. You don't want to spend your precious time in meditation thinking a whole lot of ideas. It'll just be, as Gopi's saying, something that you can reflect about or think about when you're on the bus or something like that. But how I know that it's... I think the question was, how do you know that it's from the divine? Yeah, so how I know is that I didn't think it. That's how I know. So I'm sitting in meditation, I'm not focusing on something, Baba already knows it anyway, and I'm just going into deep peace or silence, and I might have got up and doing a couple of other things or whatever, the idea's there, and I didn't think it. That's how I know that it's the divine's idea.
Very nice. Thank you, Gabriel. I'm going to ask three more questions all at once. Okay? And because we have just a few minutes left. And they're related. They're kind of how to deal with yourself in a way and the situations you're in. So one of them is, given the power of thoughts, how to deal with those negative or hurtful, harmful, divisive thoughts that are in me, in the soul, one. When the soul carries old impressions or unresolved emotions, how does Raja Yoga purify them? Closely connected. And the third one, if you are being blamed for something you did not do, and the person doesn't wish to listen to the truth, do I have to stay in silence or what shall I do?
I think you've answered your question in that question. Yeah. Do I have to stay in silence? Yeah. We would recommend be quiet. You don't need to prove anything. You can state your position. If they accept, they accept. If they don't accept, it is what it is. But it's one of the very strong pieces in a spiritual journey. Don't confront. That's really important. Because if you confront, you enter a game and you lose yourself in it. But if you just state what you need to state peacefully, if it's accepted, it's accepted. If not, it's fine.
So those negative, hurtful, harmful thoughts that come up and carrying old impressions or unresolved emotions, how do they get purified by Raja Yoga?
I love that question around what do I do with those negative, harmful thoughts, because first of all, congratulations, you're aware of them. Wonderful. That's lovely self-honesty where we started this conversation. And when I'm aware of it, I can do something about it. And I think one of the treasures of a spiritual journey is self-acceptance. Wherever I'm at on my journey, if I can accept myself, because the divine does. The divine sees the fullness of you and accepts all of that. But if I can accept it rather than fight it or avoid it, then I'm on a journey to being able to transform it. And so I think you're 50% there. You know it, you can see it, and you want to do something about it. Look at those moments, and it takes a little bit of homework, but look at those moments where you get triggered, because you won't always be feeling hurtful, or you won't always be feeling that. It'll be situational, it might be relationship focused. So see that moment, and then you're fully equipped. You know that you're going to have to do some work beforehand so that you don't react that way. And every time you don't react that way, you are leaving a beautiful impression on yourself as a soul. And you're moving back to your original nature. So, yes, we all have those emotions and feelings, but to be able to be aware of them and then move forward in transforming them, give them to the divine, in your meditation and use the antidote and allow that beautiful quality to massage away that harshness within you. And it's just the scarring. It's not the deep stuff. It's not deeply you. It's the scarring.
There's a practice, and that's called the quality of checking yourself, following what Gabriel was saying. And not just the negative thoughts, but also the positive thoughts. For example, at a certain point, someone said, "Why are you working so hard? You are okay." And I thought, why did I need to hear this so quickly? And it was a woman, so I said, "You shouldn't do that another time." But I was needing. So don't judge it, the feelings, positive or negative, but make it a practice to reflect on it and understand where that is coming from, what sanskar, what. And actually, the first time I was here, I asked one of the senior sisters, Sister Denise, I asked her, how is Brahma Kumaris related, their vision on Western psychology? And she said, well, psychology helps to understand these patterns in your life. But without spirituality, it's understanding without healing. But spirituality will bring up these patterns, and you better understand and go through it, whatever means that is. So now I'm ready to answer your question, Sister Gopi. Your first question, what I had to face. I didn't want to do it at the start because I brought some tissues, because that's deep. And mind me, just me, but so many of us have to face their insecurity or their lack of self-esteem and self-respect. And I was living a life with a lack of self-respect. I was working so hard, and I was successful, and I was working so hard in my relationships, not just in my work. And to see that and to face that and understand where that was coming from, even though I have really lovely parents, still this is a sanskar that I was carrying, and I'm afraid a lot of people. So that was a big one, to face that and realize, no, really understand, not just hear it, but feel it, that someone loves you up there. So, your first question.
Philip, you know how all of this boils down to one word, belonging. Nurturing, keeping a nurtured sense of belonging. Because I find that often when we're faced with, okay, big projects, big decisions, you can't get yourself into a pickle by thinking, am I making the right decision? But what you can do is feel right in yourself first, then make the decision. And it's only an act, right? It's only a step. And then if it's not the right step, you'll get a signal. And you can change, make another decision, make another decision. And so I think building our capacity to remain stable in belonging. And one of the principles in Raja Yoga is keeping a chart. Because a chart helps you kind of develop a compassionate relationship with yourself. You can laugh at yourself when you track your thoughts, you track what's going on in your mind, because you're revealing yourself to yourself every day. And because you do that, you neutralize something in relation to these, you know, really stubborn critical thoughts, and you can just be light about that part of yourself. Because it's a very tiny part of the bigger tree and of what God's vision is of you.
I think that, you know, when you're into self-development or personal development, you're trying to improve Judy or the personality that you carry. And spirituality is about just igniting the light of the soul so that it shines brightly through all those layers of junk and conditioning that you've accumulated. So we're not trying to get rid of all those layers. We're just trying to light up the soul with this connection to God so that you shine so brightly that it shines right through all those other layers. And for me, that's been very important, just to remember that's what I'm doing here. I'm just getting the soul to shine brightly. We're going to end there because it's lunchtime and that was a long sit. Was that okay? Were there some good wisdom shared for you? Yeah. I mean, I feel like these are tea and coffee conversations that could go on forever, which is partly why we study in a community, so that we can keep talking to each other. How did you handle this? How did you know it was God and not your own good idea? We just have these conversations all the time. So I'm sorry for those we didn't get answers for. Yes, anybody can come and learn. Yes, you've heard about this one. Yes, we should get more graphics for young people, and we should use more graphics anyways. So we'll be right on to that. And thank you for all of your questions. Somebody lost a phone. They probably want it back. Here it is. And let us have a moment of silence together.